Welcome back to Behind the Biology, brought to you by ACCC. I'm your host, Dave Yarmush. This is the third episode in our series, Professor Jamie Krill of Syracuse University, about his experience in the field of forensic microbiology. I strongly recommend listening to the first two episodes that give background to the future of his work and microbial forensics as a whole, which we'll be discussing in more detail today. Thanks again for coming, Professor Krill. This is going to be the third in our third three-part series with you. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what you've got to say.
Thanks for having me again.
I'd like to talk a little bit about what microbial forensics looks like to you in the next 5-10 years, and to give that a little bit more specificity, because that's a very broad question. Where do you think you'll see your research migrate? I know last time we spoke a little bit about some work that you are now in a position to publish and to submit to journals. And you had previously worked at a think tank where you could dream up anything you could imagine. I've got to figure that hasn't stopped. You know, that's not a quality that ever gets left behind. So between those two, I imagine you're already planning out the next steps. This research is completing, but it leads to the next part. So what do you have in mind for that?
Well, I think that a lot of this kind of goes back to what I said in the last episode, which is, you know, I'm being dragged into the bioinformatics realm. Not so much kicking and screaming, but, you know, it's a slow learning curve, but it's so incredibly important. And database development, I think once we get to a position, and this is somewhat speculative, right? I think once we get into a position where the databases that we use are fully vetted, work really well, specifically for microbial forensics, with the sequencing technology, the price of that coming down so far, I think we've just reached a point where the bioinformatics is the next logical focus, right? A lot of time and research needs to be put on this validation efforts, right? If we're using these databases for geosourcing, how well are they working? What kind of rigors are we putting them through to make sure that they work for as many scenarios as we can imagine? And that's kind of where I, you know, my imagination kicks off is thinking of the different kinds of scenarios that we might need a database to do something that it wasn't originally designed for. So even though we're working on database development now, 5-10 years from now, is it going to be something that has grown upon itself? Is it going to be something that we need to move away from, start from scratch? You know, that's all going to depend on these validation efforts.
Right. And the adoption of those validation efforts become 10 times more important with the other very practical facets you mentioned. The price of sequencing is dropping. I believe you mentioned in either the first or the second episode that you're using a MinION sequencer. And anyone who's not aware, it's not very large. It's what, probably about 5 inches long, if that, and an inch wide.
Yeah, it's you know, it takes the mobile laboratory system to your back pocket.
You know, exactly.
And a laptop. Technology is just moving so quickly, and it's just heading in the right direction for microbial forensics.
Right. And in so many ways, the days of this huge laboratory footprint and this heavy piece of equipment they're hardly gone. They obviously still have their place. The other sequencing devices they all have their merits, no doubt. But from a database construction and a database validation perspective, the MinION presents a really interesting challenge. It can be done anywhere. It can be done, or it can be used anywhere. It can be used readily and in some ways easily. And that makes the urgency for data validation, data authentication, et cetera, so much more powerful because data is coming from everywhere now.
Yes.
Or it's got the capacity, especially, again, as prices drop and it becomes viable for, you know, not storied academic institutions to be participating.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And you know, a lot of my research is banking on the fact that these mobile technologies, these especially the sequencing technology, is only going to become better, more accurate, more reliable. And that just seems like the direction that it's headed. So there's certainly a place for some of the other sequencing technologies. You know, I don't want to take away from, you know, the Illumina sequencing or the PacBio sequencing. I think it's all very relevant and something that we use in my laboratory. But if we're really focused on bringing the laboratory to the scene, right, then we need instruments that are mobile.
Yeah, and the arms race between those three big name companies, I personally think is doing wonders for all of biology. You know, this ONT's pulling or designing new flow cells periodically, and their error rate is plummeting, getting just better and better so fast.
Yep.
PacBio high fidelity sequencing is, I'm seeing paper after paper describing it. The assemblies that come out are fantastic. And this isn't even to begin discussing the different assembly software improvements that we're seeing on a regular basis. So in some ways, it does seem almost inevitable for databases to become better and better as time goes on.
I would agree. And, you know, the most painstaking process is kind of weeding through the data that we already have.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So data that's freely available, and, you know, anybody that can submit data might not necessarily have submitted the best data. Right. It's still interesting, but for people that are curating these databases, we need to be able to know the difference between the good data and the bad data. And that's just a time consuming process.
Right. It, is not as simple as it might sound. That is a certainty.
Right.
Focused more a little on your work. I know we spoke about Uravia lipolytica, Bacillus subtilis. Are you expecting to move into different organisms or discuss or research these more deeply for the same effect and just other additional traits and features?
Yeah, I certainly think that the future, in the future, I see myself working on a lot of different organisms, and not just your traditional organisms that you see in the laboratory. I'm looking more at, you know, globally distributed organisms that maybe aren't very well understood, but that are simple enough to collect. They're part of some sort of biome, and really being able to understand those that a particular species at the genetic level.
Would this be biome independent, or are you kind of aiming toward being able to characterize a variety of different biotas, you know, or biota, you know, river water, delta soil, animal matrices based on the organisms you might find there? Do you have an interest in characterizing this diversity of biota based on the organisms present in it, or biomes based on the organisms present in it? Or is this more about identifying individual microbes specifically to the best of your ability, or of course, a combination?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a combination. I think being able to identify, you know, the different species that are present in a certain sample that you might collect could provide a fingerprint for the types of microbiota that you would expect in those different, in different regions, different geographical locations. Maybe you're seeing something that should, a microbiota that's in seawater, but you collected your sample, you know, inland and it's on soil, or it was on a package that was delivered from a ship, you know. What can we really tell about that? And at what levels of confidence? And then when you get into the individual species and identifying their strains and what kind of information can that tell you about where something came from, I think that's really going to be, that will give us the most information, right? If we can do that, then that will give us the most confidence in our answers.
Right. I imagine it's, it's one thing to say this bacterium, let's say, typically exists in seawater, but it's another thing to say this bacterium typically exists in seawater from the Caribbean off, within a mile or two of the Bahama Islands.
Exactly. Exactly. And wanting to do more field biology, I'd be happy to go there and collect as many organisms as possible.
You know, I haven't done a lot of field biology, but I am a quick learner.
Yes, exactly.
Do your students have a significant influence on the direction your research takes?
They can, absolutely. A lot of it is based on their interests or, if a student comes in. I had one of my first master students, the first semester I started here, student came in and said, I really want to work on postmortem interval using the microbiome. And I was like, a lot of my focus is really on, biocrimes and bioterrorism and things like that. So, well, we'll start off. Let's look at the different organisms that you had available. And the student just really brought this project to life and was really dedicated to looking at all these different organisms. And this is kind of where I stumbled upon Yarrowea lipolytica as being an organism of interest for my laboratory. So I think that answers your question.
Yeah, and I was considering it from the idea that I'm asking you about the future of your research, but you might not know the future of your research. You know, there's any number of potential outside influences, or considering your students, potentially internal influences for what direction that's going to take.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think about all the different organisms that I could be interested in the future, right? I need to close some doors first before I open new ones. And sometimes my students will come in and open those doors for me, right? Mm-hmm. And for themselves, really. And it's an adventure, right? So we're trying to answer some very broad questions and taking a very microscopic view at how can we help solve some of these questions? How can we come upon these answers using what we have available to us today? My expectation is that in the next 5 years, the technology is going to continue to move forward, and there's going to be a lot of exciting developments, and looking forward to that and how I can incorporate those kinds of things into my research. I definitely look to the diagnostics world as a good platform. Mm-hmm. For microbial forensics.
Do you have, or maybe a student of yours, an outstanding question that you'd like to discover the answer to?
That a student has come up with?
Yourself, a student perhaps, but research that maybe not quite ready to be investigated. Perhaps the technology's there, perhaps the database isn't there, the software's not there, but the question's there.
I have to think about that. So I had a student recently come to me with questions about biofilm and how biofilms can actually help communities of organisms survive, not just as food for whatever's creating the biofilm, but as a masking mechanism. What does that look like? You know, is that something okay. that could be done? And it's just something I really hadn't thought of. And it's, you know, so the student did start working on some biofilm type projects using Bacillus subtilis. And we got some interesting results, but there was nothing that I could really say, this is how we solve for X here. You know, this is understanding those communities is really something that I haven't really thought much about, especially on biofilms that are created on other materials other than environmental. It's something I should be looking at, but it's just not something that I feel like there's publications out there. There's a lot of research, and it has to do a lot with you know, medical equipment. Mm-hmm. And you know, things that you've washed or decontaminated, and these biofilms kind of protect organisms, underlying organisms that can spread disease. You know, I think that's an area of interest, something that we could be looking at in the future as well.
It sounds almost like these biofilms behave as a more macro scale version of a spore, right? Because spores are hard to break. They're very hardy. They're more temperature resistant than the non-spore physiology of a bacterium or of a fungus. And these biofilms, to me anyway, with my limited experience, it sounds like they behave in a fashion for a community versus for a cell or for a small collection of cells.
Yeah, the little bit that I've seen, I would agree. Looking into the future, looking into the, you know, shaking my magic eight ball, you know, and trying to figure out what's next. I don't know. So the student came in, had some really good ideas, did some work with biofilm, and graduated. She's off to, you know, graduate school and whatnot, but it's something that I'm still interested in, and I just don't know how to attack it yet.
Are you waiting on like a new sequencing technique, if that would be appropriate, new lab techniques that are specifically designed for the analysis of biofilms? I know very little about biofilms. I've seen some upticks in the research of it lately. But it does seem almost like a burgeoning field unto itself.
I agree. And you know, that's the thing about kind of letting students try to answer some of their own questions on their own, is that I have to quickly, you know, keep up with the literature and what's coming out as well.
The 24-hour expert.
And the techniques and all of that, they're all very rooted in what we do in my lab now. But just understanding what's happening and being able to identify, you know, a couple, you know, what we would call maybe a trace amount of an organism that's somehow surviving under this biofilm or within this biofilm. It's incredibly complicated.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where that could go. There's a lot of work, especially very recently, onto gut microbiota and microbial communities as a different sort of interaction that's greater than the sum of its parts, right? It's not just that you have this organism and that bacterium and that fungus in place. It's that they all work together and achieve something, not a goal, not going to humanize them necessarily, but achieve something that none of them could do on their own. And based on our discussion so far, I would imagine that adapts well towards the biofilm circumstance, which is, again, a community of different microbes.
Right. You know, and I think that's a really interesting question, and kind of loop back into the idea of microbial forensics and kind of that direction is how does that community change when something enters that doesn't belong there? Mm-hmm. And can we identify those changes? What are we looking for? What does that look like?
Yeah, can you see the ripples?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I see exactly how this would apply into the microbial forensics perspective when you put it that way. You have existing community that looks like it should or look like it does typically, and you've got the second one next to it that looks different. What happened? What caused it?
Right.
What is the biological detective work to determine what caused it all?
Right. And are those, and if we come to those answers, are they reliable? Can we, is this something that we can identify over and over again in different scenarios or different environments?
Right. Can we trust that this is sufficiently common given these conditions that we'll see it over and over again? So I think we're about coming up on time for this episode as well, and ultimately for the series. I do have a last question that might be somewhat fun to answer. If you had in the next 5-10 years, more or less limitless resources, and you could maintain this your former think tank style of dream a problem, dream a solution, where would you take it?
Oh, that's wonderful problem to think about, limitless funding and you know, just being able to move forward. Fortunately, in academics, it's you know, not limitless funding, but you can really take your research where you want. So I really think that being able to move into a direction that allows us to kind of bring these laboratories to the scene. You know, I tell my students a lot about the CSI effect, right? We go through, what's your favorite TV show? Why are you interested in forensics? And everyone has a favorite TV show that has to do with forensics. And then I ask the question, okay, you know, pick out an episode and just find all the things that are wrong with it. And those things that they find that are wrong with it mostly have to do with turnaround time and how they came to solve a crime and things like that. Yeah, when you say CSI effect, it has kind of this negative tone to it, but I like to think of it as this is what the future should look like. Can we push a button and get an answer on the other end? You know, can microbial forensics and the type of laboratory work that we do provide a smoking gun, much like a fingerprint on a weapon might, right? So I think, you know, the 5-10 years from now, limitless funding, I think we'd be able to get there.
So that will end our series, Professor Krill. His work across multiple industries is well worth looking into, and the influence it has on his teaching style will surely be appreciated by his students and Syracuse University. We've discussed his winding path, the nature of microbes in modern forensics, the application of next-generation sequencing, and the consequential need for a well-established reference genome database, in this field specifically, and how all this comes together to establish the upcoming science and scientists.